Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, of the making of books, there is no end. How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Well, thanks for listening in today. And, by the way, I have a comment today. And it's more a question. And I think I'd like to not only read this as a comment, but maybe also pose the question to all of you. So this is from North Dakota. It says, greetings from North Dakota. I am enjoying reading the Lawrence of Arabia book and listening to your commentary each week. Although I am not caught up to where you are in the book, I'm still reading the very large book on George Washington, along with this current one. I am getting a sense that Lawrence may have been of the very popular current movement of wishing he were born of Arabic rather than English descent, and possibly despising his whiteness. Just wondering what your thoughts are about this, and thanks for all of your hard work. So, I don't know. What do you think, all of your listeners out there? I'll tell you what I think. Maybe we could get some comments back on this. Now, if you look at Lawrence as an individual and as a person, you have to remember he was very much an individual. And if you remember back to some of the programs we talked about, that even his parents realized that he was left better if he was left alone. And that's when they built that mini house for him as an older teenager where he could be off by himself. Now, he did associate with his brothers. He loved his brothers. He did associate a lot with his father. He was aggravated by his mother, but he still loved his mother and wrote to her many, many times to explain to her what he was doing and things like that. But I do think the reason why T.E. Lawrence liked the Arabic lifestyle was that he could be alone in the desert. I mean, if you talk about wanting to be alone and not have a lot of people around you, just go out to a dry, dusty desert. And, you know, also, I think that, you know, he did, and we're talking about this more now that we're getting into close to the end of these programs, by the way. But I don't think he was upset as much with his Britishness as he was with British politics. And the fact that, you know, essentially they were expecting him to lie to the Arabs. If you remember, the Arabic people, he just thought were very genuine. You know, they were probably very honest, although we do know that, lying is not one of their, or not lying is not one of their commandments. And the Arabic people do feel that there's a time when it's appropriate to lie. And, of course, that's one of the things I think that America doesn't face when we try and deal with Arabs, is they're very willing to lie to anybody to get what they want. But there are a lot of people in this world that do that too, whether they're Arabic or not. So, but anyway, I'm not so sure that you could say he was also against his whiteness, because he did love British values. He loved British heroes. He did love the idea of conquest and empire as long as it was helping other people. And again, remember, his view is that he wanted to help people. He wanted to help establish nations. And that was very, very British in terms of the British Empire. You know, establishing nations, bringing them education, you know, teaching them how to be organized, teaching them about health, teaching them about sanitation. I mean, that's what Lawrence really wanted to do. So I don't know, if he necessarily wanted to be an Arab and rejected his Britishness. I think he did love living in the desert. I think he did love the hardships of it. Remember, Lawrence really was into those things. He really wanted to be tough on himself. He really wanted to be the hero. He wanted to be the strong man. And remember, he wasn't very tall. He wasn't very big. So a lot of this was, a part of his personality. But, I don't think I necessarily put him in the category today where, people think they're cats and so they want to be cats, or people think they're dogs and they want to be dogs, or, how some people have said, well, they want to be black even though they're white, and they live like they're black, they act like they're black, but they're not black. And so I don't think we could put him into the category of those kind of things today. I think those are could be more mental issues than they are what he was about. But he did love the rough way of life, and he was challenged by all those things that you would need to do to be a hero. So I'll just open that up, and maybe we can get some more comments on that. What do you think? Do you think he was wishing he was born Arabic rather than English? Do you think that he was working against his whiteness? So let me just see if I can get some comments in on that. All right. Well, today, what I want to do is I want to begin our discussion of 1917, the uncrowned king of Arabia. Now, if you are following the programs along, I think what we ought to say is this, is if we were to take this book and tear all the chapters and separate them, and if we were going to put them on a timeline, chapter 7 would come immediately after Aqaba. Now, Aqaba is chapter 2, and so the thing is, Korda already covered everything on Aqaba. If you don't understand what happened at Aqaba, you might want to go back and read that. But it did essentially change Lawrence's life, I think, for the rest of the time he was alive. But essentially, you need to understand that. So here in chapter 7, or maybe I should say it this way, it's chapter 2 is really the one that could seem out of order. But I'll tell you what, when he did chapter 2 as early as he did, it really caught my attention and really made me want to read the book. Now, I also might want to say is we're probably not going to read every chapter in this book. And I'll be talking with James Brandon here in the next couple of weeks. We're just both getting up to getting classes going again. And I don't think we will finish every chapter. We'll let you finish chapters on your own. And so, but we'll be giving you what we're going to cover in the next couple programs. So, but when we open chapter 7, or this is a chapter title, is 1917, the uncrowned king of Arabia. What we have to realize is that after Aqaba, after what he achieved at Aqaba, which even the Arabs at that time didn't think he could achieve. And again, I think if you want to get a view of how difficult it was, if you can watch that old film with Peter O'Toole, Lawrence of Arabia, I think it gives you an idea of how difficult it was. I know some of that film is just absolutely stunning on the desert and the heat, and what Lawrence had to go through, and that would give you a really good picture of that. But again, remember, Peter O'Toole was not really a good Lawrence because he was so much taller. But anyway, one thing we have to realize now, after Aqaba, Lawrence is no longer an intelligence officer. I mean, he really, that whole time when he was this, intelligence officer, he was being prepared really to go into the military. And so essentially when we open chapter 7, now we're dealing with Lawrence the warrior. And remember, this was his dream all of his life. He wanted to be Lawrence the warrior. And so I think that's kind of, really, really fascinating. And so he's no longer an intelligence officer. But one thing I think is just, it's just kind of unbelievable. He's now famous. I mean, Lawrence is now famous. He's famous as a hero. He's famous as a military leader. And actually, he's become even more famous as kind of like a terrorist leader. And we have to remember that. He was bombing trains. He was bombing railways. He was bombing bridges. And so that wasn't necessarily conventional warfare for the British. And so he was very unconventional that way. But no longer, maybe I should say it this way, he's now not just famous, but he's much admired. And that's the thing, is he's really admired, and he's really seen as this military hero. Now remember, up to this point, the British were not having much success against the Turks. And, you know, we have to remember there was Gallipoli, or you could also call that the Dardanelles. Last time we talked about General Townsend's surrender at Kut, it was absolute embarrassment to the Anglo-Indian Army. It got people brutalized. Townsend was living on an island in luxurious settings. Everybody else was, you know, being beaten and murdered and bitten by mosquitoes and flies and, you know, worked to death, worked to starvation. And so it was a horrible thing. It was, the Middle East wasn't any different than what was happening in Europe at the Somme and at some of that trench warfare. Now, not only was he famous at this point, not only was he much admired at this point, but in terms of being a hero, he had gone far beyond enemy lines, and he now had a price on his head. I mean, the Turks wanted him dead, and so I mean, that's the stuff that hero novels are made out of. And so let me just read to you a quote. This would be page 295 in your quarter book, but it is just kind of fascinating how his life changed so rapidly. And sometimes it happens for all of us. There's just one or two things could happen and our lives are changed forever. But here's the thing. Lawrence is still a unique guy. I mean, he's not afraid to use explosives. He's not afraid, to do those kind of things. But remember, he's very unorthodox in the way he approaches things. But listen to this. I think Korda does a great way of writing this up. He said he had discovered that his name, his impatience with routine, his unorthodox opinions about war, and even his appearance were weapons more powerful than guns, swords, and high explosives. And so we have to remember that Lawrence not only was able to, let's say, read people, he was able to take the talents and skills he had and really maximize them and use them. When he thought that humility and modesty were called for, Lawrence could give an excellent performance of both. He had an Englishman's understanding of the value of those qualities and the degree to which they matter to other Englishmen of his class, but there was not, in fact, anything remotely humble or modest about him, as Allenby had instantly perceived. Now, in this chapter, Korda really begins to develop our understanding of his relationship with General Allenby. And, you have to remember now that Lawrence was not afraid to tell a senior officer off. I mean, he was not afraid to still do what he wanted to do. And but General Allenby really knew how to work with Lawrence. And actually, some of the officers, we've talked about this in the program, some of the officers were really put off by the way he dressed, the way he didn't care about, you know, the British look, the military look. You know, he had to be perfect in uniform. He didn't like any of those things. But Allenby just was, he was also kind of a special guy in a different way. Now, here's what Korda says about Allenby. He says, Allenby possessed to the full the most important skills of a good general, handling men, and throughout the next 2 years he handled Lawrence brilliantly. And so the thing is, if you remember so many of those, the military men just despised Lawrence because he was so anti-British military in the way they acted and all that. And so here's how Allenby worked with him. Now again, we're like on page 296, 297. I think these are two really good pages you need to really familiarize yourself with. Now, here's where Allenby was so smart. He says, Allenby rode Lawrence on the loosest of reins. So he was able to look at Lawrence. I mean, remember now, Aqaba has happened. He gets the first big victory. Here is a archaeological student, a map maker, an intelligence officer, a very brilliant intelligence officer. You know, as we learned at the very beginning of the book, you know, this little peepsqueak. Allenby respected him. And he saw the potential in him. So it says he kept Lawrence on the loosest of reins, giving him his head and allowing him to pick his own way forward over difficult ground. With a few notable exceptions, he gave Lawrence goals and directives and allowed him to reach them in his own way. Now, if you understand the British military, that in itself was unique. I mean, the British military officers, I mean, you had to obey them. You had to do it their way. And if you didn't want to do it their way, I mean, there was court-martial, there were, you know, all these disastrous things that could happen to you. But, he didn't treat Lawrence that way because he knew he could get the most out of Lawrence by letting him do it his own way, and it would still get done. I mean, he proved that with Aqaba. Now, Korda goes on to say, neither Lawrence nor the men he had led and served would have been useful if handled on any other way. The Bedouin could be inspired by the right leader, and they could be bribed or shamed into doing great things, but they did not obey orders or submit to threats, so the discipline of a conventional army was beyond them. And guess what? Lawrence was the same way. I mean, he didn't always obey orders or submit to threats, and he was really unconventional. Now, Korda goes on to say, Lawrence relied instead on the strength of his own personality and on the seemingly endless supply of British gold sovereigns. And so I think that's a great statement. So there was not a humble bone in Lawrence's body, and he knew he could work with the Arabs. He could side with them. He could identify with them. They could identify with him. But he also knew the big thing that they wanted most of all was gold sovereigns. And it's really kind of fascinating. Now, I think Korda does also a great job for us in that he gives us a little insight into Allenby's personality. So he's kind of a unique guy in himself. This is, again, page 296. It says, talking about Lawrence and Allenby and their relationship, he says, different as they were, Allenby was huge, overbearing, and notoriously abrupt and outspoken. Lawrence was, by comparison, tiny, soft-spoken, and inclined to be tactful, enigmatic, and often indirect. The two men became, at any rate in public and in their correspondence with each other, a kind of mutual admiration society. So here, they couldn't have been two more different. And again, even Allenby, if you have your book, you can find there's a cartoon that he drew of himself and of Lawrence. And it's like Allenby's a giant and Lawrence is like a hobbit. It's really kind of funny. And so, but again, they were a dynamic team. And listen to what Korda says. It says, their relationship survived the war, the publication of Seven Pillars of Wisdom, and even the fact that Allenby, perhaps the most successful and competent British general of the World War I, found himself living in Lawrence's shadow, a supporting player in the epic where Lawrence of Arabia was the star. And so can you imagine, Allenby obviously was a lot more humble than Lawrence because he was in the background. Lawrence is the star. And, of course, we have to, I think even the movie Lawrence of Arabia kind of brings that out. In some ways, Peter O'Toole was probably, the best actor to portray that. But, Lawrence would set things up when they were photographing him. He'd made sure the scene looked just right. He made sure he looked just right. And so he was out promoting himself. But definitely he was the star, in the Middle East. Now, here's one other thing that I think is a sign of a great general, especially for some individuals. Notice Allenby gave something to Lawrence that very few other generals would have done. Probably no other generals would have done. And here's how Korda explains that. It says, Allenby was astute enough from the beginning to allow Lawrence direct access, an immense concession for a busy army commander whom even major generals approach warily through his chief of staff. To put this in perspective, it is as if an acting major commanding a small force of French guerrillas behind enemy lines had direct access to Eisenhower whenever he pleased in the second half of 1944. That just wouldn't have happened in 1944. But Allenby allowed Lawrence to do that. And it was a shrewd move on Allenby's part. And Lawrence relished that. He would never have to go through the normal chain of command. And that just opened up direct communication between him and Lawrence. And Lawrence was not afraid to speak his mind to him. And in fact, at one time, and we'll probably have time to talk about that today, Lawrence was a deep thinker. And as I said a couple programs ago, he had his own plan for how to help the Arabs. And, he could be unsettling in how he thought. But, the thing about Allenby is that he really had a certain trust in Lawrence. And, he could see that he could, work with his vanity and his sense of being special. And he could see that was a deep need that had to be satisfied in him. And so if he allowed him to go directly to the top, why, he could use that to his own advantage. Now, one other thing that comes out in this part of the book is rank. And if you remember, Lawrence kind of, he really didn't necessarily care for rank, basically because he believed he was better than everybody else anyway. But here's what Korda says here. For a long time, Lawrence was accused of not taking his own rank seriously. And that is certainly true. In later years, he always talked about Colonel Lawrence as if that were a separate person whose legend kept on growing, marching on indestructibly while the real Lawrence sought to hide. But the truth was that Lawrence considered himself from the first above such commonplace things as rank. Once he had expressed an ambition to be a general and knighted before he was 30, now neither of those ambitions, though both were within his grasp, was enough to satisfy him. He had become, instead, something much more, a hero on a grand scale, unconventional, and a glamorous scale. So that's what Lawrence wanted. He wanted to be the hero. And if you're a hero, you don't need rank. And Allenby could see that. And, it is really quite true of him. And there's something really unique about his personality that to me, it's just really interesting to read it. And for Lawrence to live in our time, I'll tell you, would be really hard for him. because we mock things like being heroes. We mock, you know, people that are willing to go through tough things. We all want the easy and the smooth things. And, you know, we want our, you know, that there's so many people out in society today that want socialism because they think it's going to make their life easy. And people don't even know what socialism does for people. You know, it takes your freedom, it takes your life away from you. But anyway, it is interesting that essentially what Allenby allowed is he allowed Lawrence to become his own master. And that is really, you know, quite challenging. Here's what Korda says. It says, on his arrival in Cairo on July 10th, 1917, after the capture of Aqaba, Lawrence told Clayton, his nominal superior officer, that there was much more he could do if Clayton, quote, thought I had earned the right to be my own master. A telling phrase, and produce a sketch map of his plans, ambitious enough to startle Allenby when he saw it. Lawrence proposed to use 7 separate Arab forces to disrupt the Turkish railway system from Homs and Hama, north of Damascus, to Mon in the south, and to threaten vital railway lines and junctions deep inside Lebanon and Palestine, throwing Turkish communications into confusion and perhaps even seizing Damascus. Now, we're out of time for today's program, but we have begun our new chapter, 1917, The Uncrowned King of Arabia. So next time, we'll continue discussion of this chapter. And remember, for this current series of programs, we are using Michael Korda's book, Hero, The Life and Legend of Lawrence of Arabia. You can buy this book at Amazon.com. You can find your used copy of the book at abebooks.com. And of course, you can also check your local library. Please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. And remember, I'm really interested in what you have to say about Lawrence maybe not liking his whiteness or his Britishness. So just give me your opinion on that. Now, you can follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. And so until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.